Okay, let us begin. The question is why the split of the kingdom? And of course, everybody knows the famous story about Shlomo building Mizbeach to do Avodah Zarah, and we're going to talk about that last. So one would think the reason why the kingdom was split as a punishment for the Avodah Zarah. But as with all Judaism, Mida Keneged Mida should not just indicate that crime and punishment. I believe, and I've gone on about this a few times before, there's no such thing as crime and punishment in the Torah. There's only crime and consequence. And that's why Mida Keneged Mida, because it's always a consequence of the crime. Therefore, I'm not sure Avodah Zarah directly relates to the splitting of the kingdom. There has to be something which would involve a disunity, an act of disunity which would cause disunity. We will analyze the Avodah Zarah issue, and the Gemara is quite clear. Anybody call a Omer Sheshlomo Ta'a, Avar Eino Elota, he only makes a mistake, and I will prove the Chazal are right, as usual, but of course one needs a deeper understanding of what the sin was. But before we do that, I don't think the Avodah Zarah was a big deal. I think the Avodah Zarah, or the playing with Avodah Zarah, or allowing Avodah Zarah, was merely a symptom of the problems. So I'd like to take a look at the problems that would cause the split of the kingdom itself. It's something that I've hinted at, really, and talked a little about, but now I'd like to focus and do it inside so we can really analyze the Psukim. So if we open up to the beginning, and again, here I've mentioned before that up to the point of the Beit HaMikdash, when you read Shlomo's life, it's essentially an upscale, you know, a life of goodness and rightness until the Beit HaMikdash. Then there's the Prakim, the three Prakim of the Beit HaMikdash, and the last three chapters are essentially more or less downhill, including the Queen of Sheba story, which we discussed a little bit, although probably not as much as we could. I would ask you to go to Parakeh, which is on the first page. At the top, I sort of combine them together, top and bottom, although they're not really sequential. Towards the end of Parakeh, there's a very interesting parak. There's a, starting with Chaf Zayin, which I believe, if I'm not mistaken, is underlined. Yeah, we could actually start from the beginning because it's kind of interesting. V'Hashem Natan Chachma L'Shlomo. God gave Shlomo wisdom. Now, the strange thing about that is we already know what? We already know that he's got Chachma, right? I mean, you don't need to be a chacham to know that he's already been given chachma. So the question is, why repeat it? So there are mafarshim that say that there's a certain disunity between the... is the table okay, or should we switch back to... Are you comfortable with the table, or...?
Okay, now. More people come.
Yeah, we may be in trouble. Here's another sheet. I've got one or two. I've got a few more.
We can share here.
Oh, I've got three more. Yeah, I'm good to go. Actually, I could give one for myself, and I still have two more, so if you want to put that in the middle, just in case anybody else comes out. So, you know, there are mefarshim which discuss Hashem Natan Chachma L'Shlomo. If I want to take a look just quickly here at Rashi, no, Rashi doesn't say anything. So I remember there are mefarshim that really separate the Chachma from Shlomo for what's to follow. But as you can see, it's in a parshia, which means that the psukim are generally speaking connected. Hashem natan chokma l'shlomo kasher diber lo vayehi shalom bein chiram ubein shlomo. So you would say, what would that have to do with chokma? So the Mefarsh, if I'm not mistaken, it's Rashi, but I don't want to take the time to look in, said that because Chiram saw all the beautiful things that Shlomo was putting together, therefore, that is, the deal with Chiram would enable the building of the Beit HaMikdash and the building of his house. So therefore, we mention the Chokmah in terms of Chiram, not because they're directly connected, but because one was a consequence. The fact that people could see his Chokmah was a consequence of the deal that he made with Chiram. That's not really how we discuss Chokmah. We discuss Chokmah when it comes to Shlomo as his ability really to transform governmental systems, to come up with methodologies for creating unified trade, and the major trade partner at the time was Chiram. So we mentioned all those things. And as part of the Chokmah is not some kind of, oh, I know everything, I know how to speak the trees. That's not the issue. The issue is that he knew simply how to govern better and at a mass level, and at a mass market government level, better than anybody else really before at the time. Except maybe Mitzrayim, and then we'll run into a problem there. And that's why it says, Vaterev Chokmat Shlomo Mi Chokmat Mitzrayim Chokmat Bnei Kedem. To tell you that he did a better job, even though they had actually already followed before him. Vayala Melech Shlomo, so the next pasuk Chaf Zayin is very interesting. Vayala Melech Shlomo Mas Mikol Yisrael. He raised a tax. So the Radak and Rashi are very careful to indicate here that we're not talking about a money tax. We're talking, of course, a people tax, which was the tax that was mentioned by Shmuel. If you remember, when Shmuel had to read the riot act to the people who wanted to to have a king. You would say you have to know that he will take your children for servants, to be his cooks, to be his runners. So this is a people tax. In fact, we'll even see the people that are there. Vayihi amas shloshim elef ish, 30,000 people. Vayishlachem levanona, for a specific purpose. He sent them to Lebanon. Aseret alafim b'chodesh chalifot. Chodesh yu b'levanon, shnayim chodashim b'veito va'adoni ram. There's our man, Adoni Ram alamas. First of all, you have to understand what we're talking about here is a miluim. For those in Israel who know, you do 1 month in Lebanon and 2 months at home, which actually is not too far from a modern-day for a miluim, although fortunately a miluim could be for a Krav soldier, especially if he's an officer, 3 months out of the year. In this case, it was 4 months out of the year and 8 months at home, and essentially they would just rotate the people. Now, if you were just reading this, you would assume that were these Jews or non-Jews. You would say they were Jews. In fact, the indication is there. Vayal amelech Shlomo masmi kol Yisrael. So the indication is that they're Jews. Now the pasuk continues, however, there's a break. Chaf tet. Vayihi l'Shlomo shivim elef nosei sabal. There were 70,000 carriers. Ushmonim elef chotzei bahar. And there were 80,000 quarrymen. Right? Quarrymen. Chotzei bahar, which means they cut rocks. If you've ever gone to the West Bank, and especially some of the in the Arab towns, remember the Dehesha, they had a big quarry. We could literally see chunks of mountain coming down slowly and then being processed into Jerusalem stone or whatever else the stone is processed into. Levad, and excluding that, Misarei Hanitzavim L'Shlomo, he also had officers that were in charge, Asher Al Hamlacha, who were essentially in charge of making sure the work was done correctly. Managers, your middle to upper level management. Shlosh Talafim, 3,000, Shloshmeel, and 300. Harodim Ba'am, who would rule the people, Hosim Bamlacha. Vayitzav Amelch, Vayisav Vanim Dalot, and they carried big stones, etc., etc. So again, within the context of the Psukim, we got 30,000 Jews in Lebanon cutting down trees. Then we got 70,000 who were carriers, assuming the carriers of the trees and the stone, and 80,000 stones. So again, are these Jews or are these non-Jews? What would you say?
I'd say it was Jews.
But there's no indication that they're not.
The purpose is to build the
Beit HaMikdash. So your impression is that they are. That they're Jews. The only problem with that is that if we take a look, don't lose your place, but go on to Malachim. It's on page 2 of your text. If you go on to Malachim Tet, sorry, I think it's Malachim Yud. Let's see where I put it. No, maybe it's on this bottom section. Hold on. Yeah, no, I think it's on the bottom of the first section. Am I right? Mm-hmm. Did I do this right? Did I photocopy this right? Just a second. Mishkal Zahav, Bachot, Vayas HaMelech, Kisei Shein Gadol, so before that. Yishol Shon Racha Parashim, Motzi Asusim. It should be, just a second. I'm sorry, I'm losing my place, but I know it's here. You know what, maybe I'll use my regular Tanakh. It's easier for me to find stuff like that, right? Also talks about the number of movers. It should be in you know what? It's Perek Tet. Yeah. It's Perek Tet. It should be the Chaf Aleph area.
Yeah.
So where is it? Did I not photocopy that? Oh, I am so sorry. I goofed. I didn't photocopy it. So let me just read you the Psukim inside and listen to what it says. It's Perek Tet Pasuk Yud Tet. Yeah. For those who have a Tanakh, it's Tet Yud Tet. Yeah, no, the Tet's on the outside. You always have to look on the inside. The outside Prakim, you see that Tet on the outside? That was done by Jews. The Perekim on the inside were done by the Archbishop of Canterbury during the 1400s. So Jews, I forget the name of, there was a bunch of in Israel who tried to come up with a better format for the Prakim, and that's on the outside of the Koran Tanakh. But generally speaking, it's just not accepted. I mean, honestly, you know, it just never got acceptance that the inside columns do. So let me read to you Perek Tet, which I apologize, I did not photocopy. V'et kol arei ha-miskanot. It's talking about all the things which Shlomo built, and he built all of these places to support the army. Asher yu l'Shlomo v'arei ha-rechev, v'arei ha-parashim, v'et cheshek Shlomo asher chashak. All the desires that he desired. Livnot b'yushalayim, u'bilvanom, b'kol eretz mishalto. He built all over. Kol ha'am, who was it who built all these things? Kol ha'am hanotar min ha'emori. Anybody who was left over from the Amorites, ha'chiti and the Hittites, ha'prisi, ha'chivi, va'yivusi, asher lo mimnei Yisrael hema, which were not from Israel. B'neihem asher notru achareihem ba'aretz, their children were left over in Eretz Yisrael, asher lo yochlu b'nei Yisrael achrimam, that the Jews were not successful in divorcing from the land. V'ya'aleim Shlomo l'mas oved, he raised on them a working tax. Ad hayom hazeh, until this time. U'bnei Yisrael lo natan Shlomo aved. Shlomo did not make a servant. Ki heim anshei ha'milchama, because they were not the servants, they were not the workers, they were the soldiers. V'avadav v'sarav v'shalishav, and they were his personal army, they were, or his personal guard, or personal duty. V'sarei rekvo farashav. Eile sarei anitzavim, listen to what it says. Hold on, where's the number? There's an actual number here. I'm sorry, I feel like I'm... Right. It never specifies... Hold on. All right. It does not say how much there were. But it does indicate that there were no Jews who were servants. So now we got a little problem. Because when we look back in Hay, it looked like there were Jews. In fact, it would look like there were 150,000, 180,000. Not only that, we have a problem in Divrei Hayamim. What's the problem in Divrei Hayamim? If we scan over Divrei Hayamim, I did not print that out, but I'll tell you, I'll read it to you. Divrei Hayamim specifies specifically in Perek Bet. If you have a Tanakh, it's Perek Bet. Divrei Hayamim Bet, Perek Bet, Pasuk Tet Zayin. And it's not, I'm sorry, I did not print it out. Vayispor Shlomo kol ha'anashim ha'geirim. Shlomo counted all of the, it's hard to say what kind of geirim there are. Either these are converts, according to some parshim, or they're geri toshav. They are, Jews who are still settled in the land. Asher be'eretz Yisrael, that were living in Eretz Yisrael, acharei haspar asher sfaram David aviv, after David had already made, also made a count, vayimtzu mea v'chamishim elef, 150,000, which matches, if you go back to Parakeh, it matches the 80 plus the 70,000, but does not include the 30,000. What are they? Vayas mehem shivim elef sabal, made 70,000 carriers, ushmonim elef chotzev bahar. Right, so now we're missing 30,000 people. So now if we look back to Parakeh, it becomes a little more clear. And in fact, that's what the Radak actually says here. Shloshim elef b'nei Yisrael hayu. That 30,000 that we were talking back in Parakeh were not non-Jews. They were the Jews. The one, the next pasuk, even though it didn't specify those 150,000 people, they were the non-Jews. Why does the Radak say that? I'm not going to read it inside. But what he said was the easy work was the tree cutting down. That was considered craftsmanship, is what the Radak said. And therefore, it would not be considered avdut. It was considered, you know, I hire like a soldier. I hire a soldier to do a good job. That's not considered an eved in the sense of, you know, somebody I really... not exactly enslaved, but somebody who's really like, you know, really serving me without much choice, an indentured servant, to say the least. So the 30,000 were almost like artisans, and they would do the hard work of chopping down the trees, and then the non-Jews would, A, carry the trees all the way to Eretz Yisrael, essentially, and B, they would cut down, they would do the work on the mountains, cutting through the mountains and creating stone. The only problem with that is, in Perek Tet, it specifically mentions that there were no servants whatsoever. So again, Radak has to say those weren't really servants. But the simple pshat, if you go back to Parakeh, if you just read the psukim, the simple pshat is Vayal Mas Alaam, right? What does it say? Back to Parakeh?
Mikol Yisrael.
Vayal Melech Mas, which is the same word that he uses by the other one, Mas'a. The other one uses Mas Oveid, and this uses Mas. So the Radak is what to stand on. But what makes me wonder something is why in Parakeh did they not mention the fact that they're non-Jews? And in Perek Tet, it specifically mentions no Jews.
Well, regarding the 30,000, it says
That's true. And if it weren't for the separation, and we're sensitive to the separation. So I believe, by the way, the Malbim is right. That separation tells you that there is a difference. But even with the separation, and we are sensitive to it, and the separation does say, essentially, what you could do is put in that separation the words, and now let me tell you about the non-Jews. Let me tell you about the Masoved. But those words are still missing in Parakeh. Why not specify that there were non-Jews working? And that's what somebody said here. Who said here before? Who would you expect would be building the Beit HaMikdash? You expect the Jews. And in fact, towards the end of the Perek, the only thing that he mentions is the Beit HaMikdash. But if you go over to Perek Tet, it's not just the Beit HaMikdash, although that's part of it. It's Kol Chezek Shlomo. It's Balavanon, the Kol Arim, and everything that he builds. It's everything that Shlomo wants to build. And there, the focus is, on the non-Jews, because there it's more acceptable. This way you could conceptually say, all right, the Jews were working on the Beit HaMikdash part, and the non-Jews were working on everything else which Shlomo simply had a desire. But then you have another problem. Why does it in Perek Tet not mention the non-Jews? I want to leave that question aside for a little bit, and then I want to look at a bigger problem, which is, right now, based on the Malbim, based on the understanding, Shlomo Chas V'Shalom did not create Mas Oved off of the Jewish people. Right away, we know that there's a month issue. Think about this. You now spend 4 months, you got to figure out 30,000 able-bodied men now spend 4 months in Lebanon, away from their families, and 8 months away. So it's not great. As one who's done Miluim, and I remember when I was in Israel, whenever my boss, who was the CEO of Funtech, found out that I was going on Miluim, he would ship me to the United States. Otherwise, I'd be stuck for a month. I was just a private, so I only get stuck for a month in the Army, for 3 weeks in the Army. Well, let me tell you, it's not pleasant. I don't like sleeping in tents with guys. I don't like running around. It's actually very humorous because I was in the tank corps, and there's an old joke. There's only one way out of the tank corps, and that's on a stretcher. So it'd be a bunch of overweight old guys who could no longer barely lift their rifles, nearly blowing each other's heads off on these ridiculous maneuvers. That's what it was like. It was no fun whatsoever. And nobody enjoyed going, and it was part of a tax that essentially you pay. It was certainly no fun. I can't believe it was all that much fun. But let's say, okay, they were artisans and they were building the Beit HaMikdash. You could say that, but I want to leave it up to the idea that maybe there's something going on here. And now I'd like to drive the hammer home. Go ahead.
So was the mass on the northern tribes only, or also on Shevet Yehuda?
That's very interesting. First of all, Adoniram, as we've mentioned before, Adoniram is generally speaking associated with the north. And now let's take a look and jump ahead to a guy named Yeravam. Yeravam would be the first king of the northern kingdoms who had split away from Eretz Israel. And that, I believe, I did photocopy. And it is on the second page. And let's read what happens with Yeravam. Yeravam shows up on the top of the left-hand side of the second page. He's the third guy to give Shlomo problems. We talked about Hadad last time. We skipped Razon. He's a pretty minor player. Now let's go to Yeravam. Yeravam ben Nevatz, Ephrati, was from Shevet Ephraim. Minhat Tzreda, he was a place called Tzreda. Veshemi Mot Tzrua, and his mother's name was Tzrua. Why it goes into this detail, I'm going to leave off for today. Isha Almana, she was a widow. Eved Shlomo, Vayaram Yad Bamelech. Now, normally when you translate Yaram Yad Bamelech, what would you say that would mean?
Assassination attempt.
You could actually say assassination attempt, or what?
Rebellion.
Or rebellion. Now, it's true, you have a range. We know assassination attempt, we have actually words in Shmuel Aleph on assassination attempts. I'm sorry, you're okay with the... So on assassinated saints, we actually, if you look at Shmuel Aleph and Bet, we don't have Vayaram Yad Bamelech. If you remember, we have Ech Lo Yareta Lishloach Yad B'Mashiach Hashem. So there's the concept of actually sending out your hand. But at the very minimum, we have the concept of rebellion. It's anywhere from a full-scale possible assassination attempt, an overthrow. And generally, when you overthrow the king has simply got to go, unless you're a Napoleon, in which case you send him to an island. But chances are he's going to come back. But chances are, your goal is to kill the king. David, in fact, I don't want to go into David, but David faced this dilemma. Was he not supposed to, or was he supposed to kill the king? And at one point, he grabs his coat, and then he realizes he did something wrong, but it's not so pushing even to David exactly how far he's supposed to go. But at the very minimum, we're talking about a full-scale rebellion, a clear rebellion by Yaram Yad B'Melech. I don't think that anybody really thinks that this is talking about just raise my hand against the king, like hit the king by accident, or hit the king even by purpose. I don't think anybody would think that. I do not believe that's a correct translation. Now look at this. What? Oh, so there we have two. So that's the problem. The same problem we have with Eved is the problem we have with Mas. When I say Mas, I see Adoniram's name. Is that a Mas Avdut, like the people who were sent up to be Chotzei Etzim? Or is it like the Radak says it was a lighter form? Not only that, later on it says that no Jew was ever an Eved. What were they? They were Avadim, which means, again, not a servant, but, I don't know, what else would you call an Eved in that case? A supporter, a man who's in the service. A serviceman, I think, would be more appropriate, rather than a slave, let's say. A servant, the English word servant, it's not clear whether it's good or bad. Eved could either be a slave or could be a serviceman. I think those are the two ways to understand it here. But let's continue on, and let's take a look at these very difficult three psukim. V'zehadvar, sherivim bayab mel shlomo. And this was the reason. Now, you have two ways to translate this. Either this is what he did to rebel, or this is the reason that he rebelled. The reason why I'm going to have to we're going to have to go with this is the reason that he belted, because we're not going to see a rebellion here at all. Let's take a look. Let's leave that untranslated. Yad B'melech. Shlomo bana et amilo. He built the landfill. Sagar et Peretz Ir David. He closed the openings of the city of David. Aviv of his father. What's going on? There's no rebellion here, right? So it's hard to say this is the rebellion that he did. But even if you want to translate it the other way, which is this is the cause for the rebellion, where's the meat and potatoes here? Banata Milo. Okay, so he built the Milo. He built a lot of things Shlomo did in his life. That's a reason for rebellion. Sagar Peretz Yir David. So he closed up the openings of Yir David. It's not clear to us from the simple pshat. There seems to be a certain obfuscation going on. But now this. I'll get into it. Right now I'm going to leave it empty, and I'm going to fill it in later. I will fill in like Shlomo did the holes that are left open. It's the next pasuk, which is the scary one. Ve'ish Yeravam Gibor Chayil. And now it's giving us a little history. He was a great, either a soldier or a worksman. Vayar Shlomo et Anar ki yoseh melachahu. I want you to know, as I mentioned before, Nar does not mean a little boy. It means chosen one. He was a special one. Ki yoseh melachahu. Vayafked oto lechol sevel Beit Yosef. And he anointed him to be the leader of Sevel Beit Yosef. Now flip back a page and look at where you see the word Sevel on Pasuk Chaf Tet. Vayihi l'shlomo shivim ish nosei saval, which we have already established beyond shadow of doubt, even though it doesn't mention it here specifically that they were not Jews. They were clearly not Jews. And this was the hard work that needed to be done. In fact, a mas eved, right? Later on, it actually doesn't mince words. Mas eved. It's real servitude. So all of a sudden, wait a second. These 80,000 people that we've established are the non-Jews, the ones who's doing the gritty work. Who else has a similar type of work based on the connection of the words? Vayifgod oto. They took Yeravam and they put him in charge of the chol sevel Beit Yosef, which means Beit Yosef, the house of Yosef, Ephraim and Manasseh, were clearly working as what?
Hard labor.
Hard labor. Whether we want to say they were absolutely slaves or mas eved, that we're mincing words. They have what?
But when you think slave, you only mean that they work for 1 month out of 3.
What's that?
They work for 1 month out of 3.
You're right. In fact, are they the same people that were working up in the Levanon? We're going to see that there's a bigger problem. Now we're connected.
So that 1 month out of 3 on the 30,000, it doesn't really specify that, because we've established the break between the 30,000 and the 70 and 80,000.
Go ahead, then.
And then the 30,000 is the only one where he says that how much, and when he does Asher Delachim Bachodesh, Halichos Chodesh, Levanon, and then it comes, that's all talking about the Shloshim Ela. Then he goes on, and then by he also, Derech Agam, you know, besides that, he Hayim Le Shujim Melech Nafei Tabal, Shoni Melech Nafei Bahar, you know,
Which would
be the case? In agreement with Roberta said that they may not have been in that shift.
The 80,000.
The 70 and 80.
Oh, absolutely. And by contrast, one would get the impression that they were not sent home. That they were. You're absolutely right. So now the question is: well, wait a second. We really pretty much established that there is a distinction between the 30,000 and the 150,000. That we established through connecting the very Yamim in the end, the beginning. So who are these Ephraimites? Well, we said that maybe the 30,000 went north, but at least they got to go home. They're not slaves. I mean, it's hard to say they're slaves. But now we have another thing. We have another part in these three psukim on Yud Aleph, which is the second daf, which is the seemingly unrelated issue. Let's go back to the two things which we didn't know what they were. V'zeh Devar Harim Yad B'Melech Shlomo Bana et Amilo Sagar et Peretz Yir David. So first of all, what is Bana et Amilo? And now I'll show you something a little scary, assuming I photocopied it right. Hold on. If I didn't, I will be very upset with myself. I think it's also in Perek Tet. Yes, I did not photocopy it, so let me read it to you inside. For those who have Malach and Perek Tet, you will see how it all comes together. Here's going to be one of the final puzzle clues that just comes together. Where he's building everything, what part? Oh, here it is. He's talking about all the things that Shlomo builds. And by the way, the beginning of Perek Tet starts off with some pretty scary words, which tells you that we're on the downslide. The very beginning, Pasuk Aleph, says, "Vayihi kechalot Shlomo livnot et Beit Hashem," after he was finished building Beit Hashem, "ve'et Beit HaMelech," and after his own house, "ve'et kol cheshik Shlomo," and all the chayyim shel shlomo. And that really sets the tone for the rest of the parak. Now let's see the things that he builds, and we'll find out something very interesting. Vayishlach Hiram me'av esrim kikar zahav. This is pasuk yud dalet in parak 10. All of a sudden, we got money not flowing out to Hiram, but all of a sudden, in the second part of Shlomo's life, money is coming in from Hiram. And by the way, we'll notice that he's matching the money that Shiva is sending in. But that's a separate shiur altogether. Let's continue on. Asher halom melech Shlomo livnot et beit Hashem, v'et ha-beito, v'et ha-milo, he built his own house, and he built the milo, v'et chomat Yerushalayim, he built the walls of Yerushalayim, which, by the way, will give you a hint about closing the openings of David. We'll get to that in a second. Ve'et chatzor ve'et megiddo ve'et gezer. Paro melech Mitzrayim. Interesting enough, he brings Paro in to conquer Gezer. Va'yilkod et gezer ve'yisfa ve'esh ve'et hakani ha'yoshev ve'ir harag. Ve'yit neim shluchim lebito eshet Shlomo. And he gave all the things. Paro went up to Gezer, was given essentially permission to come into Gezer during the second half of Shlomo's life, essentially so he could get enough money to pay off a dowry for Bat Shlomo. That's really what shluchim is. Vayiven Shlomo at Gazer, he built the city of Gazer, via Beit Choron Tachton, which is not too far north of Yerushalayim, Vet Balat, via Tadmor, Bamidbar Arts. I'm not going to get into all those issues. Vet Kol Areya Miskanot, Asher Ayu the Shlomo, he built all these military establishments that we saw. Hold on. Where's the Milo? Oh, here it is. Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Eile Sareya Nitzavim, Asher Alam Lacha the Shlomo. These are the Jews that he established to be the middle level managers. Chamishim v'chamesh meot, just 550. Harodim ba'am osim v'mlacha. Ach, bat paro, at this point, bat paro, alta me'ir David, she went up from Ir David, el beita, to her own house, asher banalo, which they built for her, az bana et hamilo. And that is why, az bana, in that time, they built the milo, which means the milo was specifically built for who? It was built, it was a landfill. Essentially, you know, Yerushalayim has a lot of mountains. They built a landfill in there for the purpose of being able to build Bat Paro next to Har HaBayit. You got, again, that was Har HaBayit. It's an argument where exactly Beit HaLevanon was. But I'd like to go with the opinion that there was Har HaBayit, which had the Beit HaMikdash. Next to it was Beit HaMelech, and then you run out of space. You got a mountain. So you fill up the mountain with a milo, and you put on Bat Paro, which means that... So again, we said that why did Yerovam get upset at Shlomo? What was the forment? Again, we're still looking at the forment for the rebellion. So if we go back, the forment is on two things in that second pasuk. One is he built Beit Milo, and the other one is that he closed the walls of Yerushalayim. And then it says, and he was in charge of Sevel Beit Yosef, which means who built the house and the whole underlying status of the whole underlying Milo for the house of Bat Paro. It was none other than... Not other Beit Yosef, right? So Beit Yosef, do you see that connection? Beit Yosef comes down. I have a question. If you were Yerovam, how would you feel about that? How would you feel about that? You come down, you're brought down. You're not one of the guys who gets to go. You're compared to several of Beit Yosef. So apparently, if we just do a simple connection with Sukkim, you weren't even able to go home. You were considered indentured servants. Why? The Milo's got to be pretty tough to build. You got rocks slicing. I mean, you got to sort of physically feel it. You're building in essentially an entire man-made mountain, and you're doing it in a day where there's no cranes and there's no none of those things that you always see in the skyline of Yerushalayim. It's a serious piece of work. It's Sevel. In fact, moving stones like that sounds exactly like the Jews who built Arei, what does it say in Shemot? Who built Arei in Ramses, Arei Miskanot, it's all the same things. And who's doing that work? None other than Beit Yosef, which has always been, and I don't want to go into this fully, but I've mentioned in different shiurims about Malchut, we've always had the Yosef-Yehuda conflict. And apparently the way Shlomo feels that it's possible to suppress Beit Yosef is to get them to be servants. Now, we could say that this is Yerovam's opinion. Yerovam feels that he's overworked. Nobody likes to be programming. Everybody wants to be a manager. Nobody wants to be laying out everybody wants to be sitting in City Hall doing the work. Nonetheless, let's go ahead and take a look at where the actual rebellion takes place. And this is the last item sheet down here. It's in Perek Yud Aleph. Actually, Yud Bet Pasuk Aleph. This is where the split actually takes place. Shlomo is dead. We'll go back to the end of Shlomo's life in a little bit. But I'd like to talk about, to kind of make an interesting point here, that Rechavam makes himself. Rechavam is Shlomo's son. Vayelech Rechavam Shechem, he goes to Shechem, ki Shechem ba kol Yisrael lahamlichoto. Because essentially all the northern kingdom said, if you want to be our king, you better come up to Shechem. For reasons that have to do with the fact that Shechem was Ir Melucha of of Yosef very often. That's correct. It's on the border. Shechem is on the border between Ephraim and Manasseh. And that's very significant. It's the border between Ephraim and Manasseh. But let's take a look. Vayihi kishmo Yeravam ben Nevat. Interestingly enough, Yeravam ben Nevat has already run away. And I'll go back to Yeravam ben Nevat in a second. V'hu odeno b'mitzrayim asher barach v'pnei amel Shlomo. He ran away from Shlomo after he tried this rebellion. Vayeshev Yeravam mitzrayim. He doesn't even come back. Vayishlechu v'yikrulo. They had to go and get him, which tells you a lot about Yeravam's personality, by the way. V'yeravam kol kal Yisrael. And they came all together. V'yidabru el Rechavam lemor. And they speak to Rechavam, who they've called, by the way. Now, this is a famous machloket Eben Ezra and Radak. Eben Ezra says they had no intention of sending up Rechavam as the king. It was a joke. It was to set, because they knew Rechavam would say nasty things to them, and that would give them the excuse to rebel. The Radak says no. The Radak says, and I believe the Radak is right, that they were giving Rechavam a chance. Because, what's that?
A last chance
based on their taina. They're upset about the fact that they're being treated. Now, what I want to tell you is, right now, based on the word sabal, you could almost say that they were slaves. And you may be shocked. How is it possible that Shlomo enslaved an entire tribe? I can't accept such a thing. Except, let's look at the words of Rechavam himself. Pasuk Dalet. Avicha, they say, Hiksha Ulenu. He made our burden heavy, which sounds just like who, by the way, of course. What's Hiksha et Ulenu? Jews of Mitzrayim, again and again, right? It's pretty tough, but this is Yirmiyahu making a final decision on what words get in to say from Malachim. Somebody asked me that last week, by the way. It was Yirmiyahu who edited, not wrote, say from Malachim. Most of this stuff probably comes from text of whatever Nabi was around. We'll meet an Achiah Shiloni. We will meet Natan, of course, is still alive. Amon, Haman, and Yedotan, Asaph, Haman, and Yedotan are still alive. But Yeravam had the final, I'm sorry, Yirmiyahu had the final call of what got in and what did not get in. So we say that he, who katav et Sefer Malachim. All right, let's continue on. Avicha hiksha ulenu ve'ata nyu ata hakel me'avodat avicha. And the Radak says, it's an honest question. They're not trying to put him on the spot. Give us a break. What are you doing to us? HaKasheh umi olo HaKoved asher natana leidu v'na'avdecha. We will serve you as servants. All you have to do is lighten up the load and we'll still be your servants. So if you can lighten up the load and still be somebody's servants, then the servitude beforehand has to be pretty rough. Now you could say that they had the same delusion that Yeravam did. Ah, what's the big deal? Because they wanted to be rulers. But if that was true, then Rechavam's answer, if they were over-exaggerating, Rechavam's answer should have been what?
It ain't so bad.
It ain't so bad. But that's not Rechavam's answer.
Near
take
Pima
a look.
Near
what?
Near Pima Ken, near
what's that? Where is that?
That's what Paro said to the Rabbi Israel.
Right, I'll make it even worse, right?
Yeah, it's too amazing.
Right, well, let's take a look. That's exactly what Rechavam's going to say. Continue up to the second column. This is where he gets all the bad advice. Yeravam gets the bad advice. Rechavam, Shlomo's son gets the bad advice. From the kids,
yeah.
Based on the skenim. Ve'ata avi ha'amim aleichem. Oh, I'm sorry. Ve'ata avi him'is aleichem ol kaved. He agrees. He says very clearly, my father put on you a heavy, heavy burden. Va'ani osef aluchem. I'm not going to take away. I'm going to add on to your burden. Avi yisar otchem b'shotim. Yisar, from the word Yisar, is either Yisurim, or it could actually mean Lasur Mishu, is to put somebody in jail. He captured you. He tied you up. Etchem Bishotim, which are with sticks. Again, you have pictures of, I hate to say it, but I have pictures of, what was his name in the Ten Commandments? Coming in with, the Shotim across his back. What was it? Charlton Heston coming across the, that's what the Shotim means. Shotim means sticks. Either with sticks or with the actual yoke, a physical wooden yoke. Va'ani eyaser etchem be'akravim, and I will do it with scorpions. Yeah. But you know what he's clearly saying about his dad? He's saying, you're right. No, the words are clear. If it wasn't true, he'd say, listen, you guys got major emotional problems. You want to be the king. I'm the king. You're exaggerating the whole thing. He doesn't say he's exaggerating at all. In fact, he lays it in even more clearer terms, which puts Shlomo in a very interesting light. Why he did what he did for the last 20 years of his life, how it ties into Bat Paro, because again, the Sevel came on two things. One is Bat Paro. So there, it's going to tie into what Bat Paro would ultimately corrupt him on, which was what? The Avodah Zarah, and that's where we'll end off Shlomo's life. And the other one is Peretz Yir David. So I want to tell you what that means. There's a machloket what Peretz Yir David is. According to the Radak, Peretz Yir David. I'm not going to do it inside because I won't have time to do it. I'm pretty sure I'm getting a Radak and Rashi right. I know it's Machloket, and I believe I have it right. According to the Radak, it was that Peretz Yir David is that in the ancient times, the generals would always, the kings would always leave openings in the walls for escape. So that if a foreign country would attack, there was a way to escape out the back door. And essentially, Yerovam was saying that you, Shlomo, have so much gava, you have so much haughtiness, that you're closing up the walls to say, I can never be conquered. I believe that's the Radak. You know what? Maybe I will take a look. Hold on a second. Because it's important that I get Radak and Rashi right. Not for me to misquote them. And I think we have enough time to do this inside. What? It's Perek Yud. Where is it? Perek Yud Pasuk what? Or it's Yud Aleph. No, is it Yud Aleph?
Yes, it's Yud Aleph Pasuk Chaf Zayin.
Thank you. Chaf Zayin. Here we go. So let's take a look at the Radak. Here it is. Sagar Peretz Ir David. I'm reading the Radak. Pirshu bo, ki David asa Peretz b'chomot tiyon. He broke down openings into the walls of Zion.
But that's really what you think of Peretz. You think of a breaking through, a breach.
Yes.
Literally a breach.
That's
not,
right.
Not a built hole.
Right. Well, that's because the walls were already...
That was,
yes, that's correct. That's because the Yebusim had it before, and it was a full wall, right? David had to essentially conquer it, and apparently he left the breach open. You're absolutely right. Peretz is a breach. She'im yimrudu bo Yisrael. If the Jews would, according to David's thinking, he was aware of the fact that there was always a threat that his own people would rebel against him. Yetzei v'yivrach misham below datan. He'll be able to get out without them knowing. It happened by Absalom, and it was potentially happened by Sheva ben Bichri, even though he won the war himself. According to the Radak, and I guess he knows this. The Radak says that's exactly what the Bnei Yishmael, what the Arabs do at that time, which is the year, I think 1250 to 1350, I believe the Radak lived. Sheyasu peretz b'mivtzereihem. They make openings in their walled cities. She'im yakumu al hamelech bnei ir. So this way, if the own people in the city come to kill you, you have a way out. She'yibrach misham. Vayikru shmo shar habeget. It's called the walls, according to, and apparently Arabs called it the gate of the traitor. Traitor's gate. V'shlomo sagar ta peretz. Shlomo closed up the peretz. V'amar Yeravam, and Yeravam said to him, Ru'u gavhut libo, look what an egotistical guy he is. Shesagara peretz, shehu boteach, he's so sure, she'eno yaremi merit. Now, Rashi says something else, which is even more fascinating. So really, that I have a question, does that speak bad about Yeravam at all? It doesn't speak bad about Yeravam, but it doesn't necessarily speak good. I mean, all he's doing is calling out, it's not... I'm calling out my king. Who am I, a servant, to call out a king if he thinks that he's not going to have people go against him? What's the big deal? It's up to me, Yerovam, to decide whether Shlomo Melech is a Baal Gav or not. Well, listen to Rashi. Rashi gives a different one, which is based on the Gemara, based on Chazal. He says like this, Shahaya haperetz achorea milo. The peretz was after the milo. He ties the two things together, although I don't think it's necessary, and I'll explain why. Amar lo, avicha, Yerovam said to him, your father opened up the walls, b'choma kidei likanes, here's the catcher, likanes ole regalim, so that people could come up to Yerushalayim with ease, and they didn't have to be counted at the door. And this is very, I got to tell you, Chazal knew what was going on. Remember, we really explained that what Shlomo had done is he militarized the entire state. We based it on Sheva and the Arei Mishkanot. He had militarized, he had so many soldiers. He had militarized his state. So what he did was he created essentially a certain amount of isolationism. He wanted to know who's coming. There were checkers. When you come into the airport, you know who's coming, you know who's going. So David had specifically broken walls so that people could freely come into the city, even though there would be a greater risk. Not that there would be less risk for David, but so there would be, even though there's a greater risk, it would open up the city. Vata gadarta otam lasot en negri al bat paro, and you closed it up to make, I don't know, some kind of gymnasium for bat paro. So here bat paro comes again, just like the milo. Bat paro, lohoshiv sham avadeho mishartah, so that what could you do with these pratsim? Apparently they solidified the wall. They beat the milo on, built the milo like right next to it, so they could build a nice, solid, big stadium for not only bat paro, but all of their servants. And here, It's Yeravam. If this is true, we take this at face value. Has Yeravam sound? Yeravam's going to say, how dare you close off the wall so that people can't come through Ergel, and you're putting emphasis on Bat Paro. That's such a bad thing. Not such a bad thing whatsoever, right? Yeravam, in fact, is being a pretty spiritual guy. And that's why Chazal criticized him for speaking out in front of other people. The Gemara goes on to say, what was Yeravam's problem? Was that he was a Baal Gadra. He thought that he could say, what was Vayarim Yad? That he did it in front of everybody else. The truth is, again, that's the medrash. What the Yarim Yad is, we'll see, or we won't see in a second. What happens, let me just sum up quickly, because I want to get to the Avodah Zarah part. So what you could see is that both parents, according to this Chazal, and it's very sensitive, both the building, the closing up the walls was influenced by Bat Paro, and again, it's pure medrash, and I'll explain what it means in a second, and the Milo itself was specifically built so that Bat Paro could be in there. And to get Bat Paro in there, he took Mitzrayim out of Mitzrayim, sent him to attack an own city, right? Shlomo was in charge. Shlomo was the ruler. Mitzrayim was on a down phase at this point. The major players was Shabbat to the south, and Hiram to the north, Sidon. So he took Melech Paro, he sent him up to Gezer to conquer so he could bring enough money down to involve him in the whole wedding place. So everything really revolves not so much physically around Bat Paro, but sort of socially or emotionally around Bat Paro.
Gezer is where?
What?
Where's
Gezer? Gezer is, you know where Ra'anana is? About 20 miles north of Ra'anana. It's at the very Jenin. So Jenin is right, if you picture the mountain area, which is Har Shomron, as you come down from Har Shomron into the flatlands, it's called the Shefela, where Ra'anana is, Ramat Hashon. So essentially you've got hills instead of mountains. If you go to the top of that hilly area before you get to Emek Yisrael, that's where Gezer is. So essentially it protected against anybody who was conquering from the south who would want to go down to the, who would want to break through Emek Yisrael and go down through the seaside, which would be Netanya, well, maybe south of Netanya. It would be Tel Aviv and Herzliya. You would have to pass through Gezer first. So it was a very strategic city.
I thought Megiddo was that.
Megiddo had another position at the north part of Emek Yisrael. This would be on the southwestern part of Emek Yisrael. Both very important. I'm sorry, I should have brought maps. It would have been made a little more clear. A very strategic city. Okay, now, how does this all tie into Bat Paro? I can tell you, by the way, that I don't believe that that was the merit. I don't believe that's where he did the merit in English rebellion. In fact, afterwards, I don't want to go into it too quickly, so I'll just sum up. After this conversation, these three psukim, where it describes the reasons, all of a sudden, he's going out of Yerushalayim. It doesn't say he's running away from Yerushalayim. He's going out of Yerushalayim, probably going home. And he runs into Achiah Shiloni. And Achiah Shiloni rips the beged into 12 pieces, which sounds just like who? Shmuel and Shaul, even though we're dealing with the king who will get as opposed to the king who will lose. You have images of this. And David... What? Right, to indicate the tribes. Right, and there the issue is the tribes stand the chance of being split if we don't get together and do something about this. Right. Also with the 12, with the famous battle by the well of Givon between Ishbosheth's people and Avner and Yoav. There were no coincidence that there were 12 people fighting to the north and 12 people fighting to the south. Sure, always the number indicates an attempt to have control over total control of Eretz Yisrael. So essentially what he does is he tells him that he's going to be the next king, just like Shmuel told David. I believe that we never see the rebellion here. The rebellion is in this parak. And what's interesting is keep in mind who's the Navi here. He's called Achiah HaShiloni. Shiloh, of course, was the city where the Beit HaMikdash was, originally the Mishkan, and whose Shevet was it in? Shevet Ephraim, actually. The only time the Mishkan is outside is in Shevet Ephraim, which ties, of course, into Chol Sevel by Yosef. Yeah. And that may be one reason why Shlomo wouldn't listen to him. I said many times, I'd be beating a dead horse to tell you, what happened with Shlomo? How come he just didn't listen to a Navi? So I pointed out from the fact that it says that his Chachma was greater than Nevi'im, that he really didn't listen to Nevi'im. That was his problem. He felt that he was above the Nevi'im. So I got to tell you, if he didn't listen to his father's own Nevi'im, Natan we don't see, God we don't see, Eitan, Heman, Yidotan, Ya'asaf, we don't see them. Certainly a guy who's coming from Ephraim's territory, Achiah Shiloni, hard to believe that if he comes down and tells Shlomo what's going on, hard to believe that Shlomo will accept his words. So I believe that what was going on. I think Shlomo got the news, and like Shaul, he was not happy about the news, and that's ultimately why Yerubim runs away. With that in mind, that again, we focus on, essentially, just to review, we've established that even though it says in the beginning, while we're building the Beit HaMikdash, the Torah, the Navi tries to emphasize not the non-Jews, but the Jews. At the end, when he's building everything he could build, just for the sake of having fun building it, it's the non-Jews that are connected, and then the non-Jews' work are then directly connected to Beit Yosef's work. And then Yerubim and Rechavim both agree that it was more than just service. It was, if not slavery, near slavery. And the fact that Adoniram shows up should not be surprising. Now what I'd like to do, oh, by the way, I think I'll have enough time for the Avodah Zarah. I just want to finish off one thing on the second page. This is where the kingdom is lost to Rechavim. Take a look in the bottom column, bottom left, in Pasuk Yud Chet, which is after the break. So after essentially the northern kingdom have said, you know what, if you're going to be like that, then get out of here. And they say some very famous words, Malanu Chelek B'David V'Nachalav Ben Yishai, which are the same words that Sheva Ben Bichri said to David on Melech. And that's where David went and fought and got them back. But then look at Yud Chet. V'Yishlach Melech Yeravam Et, guess who he sends? Adoniram again, Asher Al Hamas. And what do they do to him this time? Vayirgamu kol Yisrael bo evin vayamot, and they kill him. And that's very symbolic. That's very, now that we've established who and what Adoram is, of course Rechavim sends him back. What?
Sarajevo.
What do you mean?
The assassination of the Archduke.
I'm not familiar.
World War I.
So the Archduke was what?
Nothing. He was just a figurehead, but because he was assassinated, the whole thought, everything started.
Right.
And he just brought everything.
Yeah, this guy was the chief tax collector.
He is a powerful. The fact that they wanted to kill him was true. It was symbolic, but it was also very practical. They have essentially said they've made sure that they. I mean. Again, don't picture Tanaka stick figures. Adoniram did not go up by himself and walk up to people and say, give me all your people. Okay, that's not the way it was. You know, tax collector, I know I've made this joke before, but I'll say it again. My father-in-law always says, the only reason we pay taxes in the United States is because if you don't, big men with guns will come and take you away. I assure you that Adoniram showed up with big men and guns. How do I know that? Because right afterwards it says, V'amelech Rechavam hitametz la'alot b'mer kavah. He almost couldn't get back on his chariot to run away. I assure you, he was there also. Why does it mention Adoram? Because it is symbolic. But again, as you're saying, it's also very, very practical. Because I assure you, he showed up with force that people were supposed to respect. What Rechavam didn't understand is you need a lot more people than maybe 100 tax collectors or 500 tax collectors when you've lost the entire kingdom. And that was something Rechavam simply didn't know because he didn't have the knowledge, David and Shlomo, that he was a bad king. Now, with the time we have left, let's go back to the Avodah Zarah and see how it ties into Bat Paro. Because what we really established is that this kingdom splits not because of Avodah Zarah. The kingdom splits, as I said, it's crime and consequence, or misdeed and consequence. Shlomo drove away the northern kingdom. You can't help but miss that. He let himself get carried away. If it were only him building the Beit HaMikdash, then the people would have been okay. So let's say those people cutting down trees, not like the Malbim said. They were real, they worked hard. But at least they were building the Beit HaMikdash, or the house of the king, or even the king's wife house. I can understand. But to build a thing for her servants and her servants' servants, to close off religion and to override everything, that's simply unacceptable. Then we're no longer, you know, we're no longer drones working for a good service. We're just a bunch of idiots. We're a bunch of friarim, like they'd say. We're a bunch of friarim working for a king who simply can't stop. And there's something to that. There is. And because of that, the split is created in Shlomo's time, not in Rechavim's side. Rechavim, if he was a good king, according to the Radak, very clear. If he was a good king, he could have pulled everything back together. They gave him a chance. Shlomo, why didn't they rebel during Shlomo's time? So Radak says very clearly, everybody had money. And this was something that we mentioned. They were so rich, it was, what, $2.5 million? They had cash. When you have cash, if people are upset about taxation without representation. We established that each, not Shevet, each one of the 12 districts gave approximately $2.5 million of bread to Shlomo, his house, and his soldiers a month. That was, we just took an estimate. I forget how we got to the number, but we made an estimate about how much soul it was worth. It was a humongous amount, and we came up to $2.5 million in today's dollars of soul a month. A humongous amount. It's just a certain amount of carried away. But now let's go to the Avodah Zarah. So why then does the Navi say that the reason why, right? He commits Avodah Zarah, and then the Navi says, because you did this, which assumes the Avodah Zarah, that's why I'll split the kingdom. That just destroys my whole Shear. So of course, in order to make sure that my Shear still has a foundation, the reason why the nation was split is because Shlomo split it. We have to find out what the connection is between Avodah Zarah and the connection between what was going on before. And for that, what we will do, I hope I printed it out, would be Yud Aleph at the top, Az Yivneh Shlomo, very top of the page. Before I read Az Yivneh Shlomo, I did not print out, but I want to give you a little preface of what happens beforehand, before Pasuk Zion in Perek Yud Aleph. So it's Yud Aleph, Pasuk Pasuk Aleph, and it doesn't start with the Avodah Zarah at all. It says like this, V'hamelech Shlomo ahav nashim nachriyot. He loved non-Jewish women. Rabot, ve'et bat paro, and also bat paro, hamoviat, amoniot, adomoyot, sedaniot, chitiot. So everyone is either just nachrim, or tribal, or national. There's one person singled out by name, and that, of course, is bat paro. So let's see what it has to do, what that has to do with anything. Minagoyim asher amar Hashem al bnei Yisrael lo tavo aleihem. Do not come to them, because if you do, you will be attached to their ways. And then it mentions that he had shvamiot wives, 700 wives, and 300 pilagshim. Everybody always has found that number. It's 700 wives, 300 pilagshim, a total of 1,000. Probably the 1,000 is not meduyak. Vayatu nashav elibo, and they split his heart. Vayhila etzik no nashiv hitu et levavo acharei Elohim akarim. Sounds like a Avodah Zarah. They tilted his heart towards the Avodah Zarah. V'lo haya libo shalem im Hashem alokav kilvav David imo. That pasuk itself is a contradiction if you read it that way. Chazal knew what they're talking about. Let me read the pasuk again. During the end of his days, his wives turned his heart acharei Elohim acharim, which if you translate as Avodah Zarah, then it can't work out. Why? Because the rest of the pasuk is his heart was not complete as his father's heart. If you want to say that he liked knocking people over the head for no reason, and his heart wasn't with God as much as his father's, you could say that. But you can't say the guy is an Oved Avodah Zarah, and then as a comparison say, oh, and what that means is, he wasn't shalim as his father did. Because that, you see, there's a lack of comparison. It shouldn't say that he wasn't as shalim as his father was.
You don't have the symmetry with his father.
What's that?
You don't have the symmetry in the possibility.
You would expect an opposite. He wasn't at all with Hashem. Not that he was, well, he wasn't as good as David. What? Loya Shalem, Loya Efes, Loya Efes im Hashem Elokecha.
You could drop the Shalem from that. You would have a Loya Elohavo im Hashem Elokecha.
Yep, but you can't do that. You can't drop that Shalem.
You
you're right, the word Shalem, I mean, it doesn't fit. So again, that's the hint that it's not a Avodah Zarah. But wait a second. Vayelech Shlomo acharei Ashtarot Elohei Tzinonim. But he goes after the Ashtarot and the gods of the Tzinonim. Vacharei Milkom Shikutz Amon. This is, by the way, probably not Moloch. Very hard to believe, and I'll explain why in a second. Vayah Shlomo Hara Beinei Hashem. Again, we have a problem. V'lo milei acharei Hashem k'David ado. And he did not completely go like David. What? He just did a Avodah Zarah. That means he ran away in the opposite direction. So what's going on? Now let's take a look at the next parak. That's a clincher. Az Yivneh Shlomo Bama L'kmos Shikutz Moav Bahar Asher Al Pnei Shamayim U'lemolech Shikutz Pnei Amon. He creates two Bamot. One is to Shikutz Moab, whose name is Kamosh, and the other one is Shikutz, the false god of the Ammonites, whose name is Moloch. But again, here probably not the Moloch. I'll explain why in a second. So I have a question. I can understand where he'd single out Bat Paro, because that was his wife. But why specifically single out? If I'm going to say he built all the Bamot, in fact, if I'm going to single out Bat Paro, and now I'm going to single out anything as a Avodah Zarah, what Avodah Zarah would you think I would single out? Mitzrayim, I expect a Mitzri Avodah Zarah. Why is it Ammon and Moab? In the first part, I'm singling out Bat Paro, she's the important one. Now that I'm talking about the actual thing where there's a Maisa, where I could see that Shlomo's doing something, it's not Bat Paro at all. It's El, the woman, and by the way, Kemosh and Moloch, who are the gods of Ammon and Moab. Let me continue on. Vayitanaf Hashem b'Shlomo, he was disgusted with him, he was angry with him, kinatalavo meim Hashem, Elohei Yisrael, and Yirai Lav Pamayim. So I'll explain to you something. I'm not an expert on Avodah Zarah by any means, and I'll be closing up soon. But I believe this is correct. Kemosh and Moloch, whenever you meet them, in fact, we meet them first time with Yiftach. Yiftach is having an argument over land on the other side of the Jordan River. Ammon is taking it back. Apparently Ammon at this point was worse. Interesting enough, in Shoftim, Ammon was worshipping Kemosh, not Moloch. This is the first time we see. At that time, Ammon was worshipping Moloch, right? Because Ammon was the one who went against Yiftach, right? And he says, whoever Kemosh, your God, inherits for you, whatever land he inherits for you is yours, whatever my God inherits for me is ours. So they're arguing over that land that used to be Ammon and Moab, but got taken away by Sichon, then conquered by Eretz Israel, and became part of, I don't know about part of Eretz Israel, but it belonged politically to Eretz Israel. So wait a second, I thought Kemosh was the Moab, Ammon God, now he's the Moabite God? So here's my, and also Yiftach is comparing your God Kemosh to my God, which gives you the sense of what? Keep in mind, what tribe, where did Ammon and Moab come from, of course? Lot. I think, but I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure based on what I've seen of Kamosh and Milkam when they show up, not Moab, but Milkam, is that they're not Avodah Zarah in the practical sense. They are monotheism. I believe, and I'm not an expert, but based on what I've read in Dot Mikra and other places and what I've read in the text, that they only had one god. His name was Kamosh. And apparently, after Ammon and Moab started to drift apart, so Ammon came up with their own god. At first, they both served one god. We never really hear about Ode Avodah Zarah with Moab, right? Eglon Melech Moab. In fact, is the famous Medrash that we respect Moab, and out of Moab comes Ruth, because he stood up when he said Hashem's name. One gets the impression that they're an Aramaic tribe, they're a Semitic tribe originally, right, from Lot, that there's a sense of monotheism there. Kamosh is the god. Now, is it a bad monotheism? I remember Rav Lichtenstein, we were talking with Rav Lichtenstein about Christianity and whether you can go into churches and whatnot and what you would have to do for a Christian with Christian belief and what's going on. He said, you have to understand, there's a difference between, and I was there myself, this is first person, there's a difference between Avodah Zarah, which is inherently immoral, when you're talking about Moloch, as in the original Moloch that people burn their kids to, where you're talking about a pantheon, or whether you're talking about a religion. He said just these words, I'll try to quote them, but whether you're talking about a religion that simply makes a mistake. That's it. Certainly a moral religion that makes a mistake. That's pretty much what he said. I may be misquoting a little bit, but that's pretty much what I remember. I get the impression, like maybe Christianity and maybe Allah is Allah, Avodah Zarah. So Machloket, most of us would not say Avodah Zarah. Allah is more like God when he wakes up on a really bad day. You know, it's a really, one gets the sense of not pure Avodah Zarah. And most people would say it's mutter to go into a mosque. And the Rambam's clear that not only is a mosque mutter to go into, but he also says the Notzrim also mutter to go into. All right, he's cholik with every other Rishon, but that's what the Rambam said. Because one gets the impression of monotheism. So in my impression, why single out specifically the Bamot to Moab and the Bamot to Amon's gods? Because they were essentially monotheistic. I don't know if it's exactly like Allah, but it was, listen, you've got your one god, and you've got your one
but
god.
But if the Torah would separate it out, you would think they'd be separating out the worst examples, not the best examples.
You would, that's correct, but here's the interesting thing. You're right, but let's take a, you're right, you know, I can't argue that. You would think it would be the most worst example, but I would say, here's what I want to say. Instead of being the worst example, I would say it's the most indicative example of Shlomo's problem. Let me explain what I mean. Take a look at who worships at these Bamots. In Pasuk Zion, the first one. Az yivneh Shlomo b'malach mo shikutz Moav b'har, asher al pnei Yerushalayim, this is probably hard as 18, ulumolach shikutz pnei Amon, v'chein asa lechol nashav anachriyot, maktirot u'mizabchot le'elohehen. What's the tense there? What's the vinyan? It's feminine. So there, the pasuk, I think, is going out of its way. I mean, very often you don't see feminine text that it's that. Who's the only person worshiping? It's only the wife. So here's a guess of what I feel. These are the two clincher psukim. The first, the prakim. The first parak we have a problem is why Bat Sheva is focused, when in the second parak, Bat Paro, but in the second one it's not Bat Paro, it's Amon and Moab. And why does it say that he wasn't just Mileah Harei David Avdi? What is the connection? So here's my feeling. Bat Paro, and again, I'm not an expert, and I'll really be done very soon. With this I'll close up. I'm not an expert on Avodah Zarah. But my feeling is that the Chab to Christian, that to the Chab to Mitzrayim, was their very ecumenicalism. They were a pantheon god. You had your god, I had my god, we had Ra, we had this guy, we had that guy. It was a very take-what-you-want religion, right? I got my sheep god, I got my this god. Most others were really, really serious about their gods. Like Sidonim, Ashtarot. They had Ashtarot. It was a pantheism, but you could deal with a little baby Ashtarot, but there was a focus. I think, and again, this is definitely a hypothesis, just trying to pull it together. Bat Paro was a point of view, was an establishment. It ties in with the whole building of the chariots and the things to Bat Paro. And all the things we show where Shlomo essentially becomes like Bat Paro. When you're essentially saying that I'm willing to, next to your shrine, I'll say, I'm not going to worship, right? It says very clearly, I'm not going to worship on you, but I respect you and I respect you. Who do I build to? I build to all of them. But the Torah focuses on the monotheistic ones to show that why the monotheistic ones, even though they're the wrong monotheism, to show that he wasn't a voting Avodah Zarah. The Chazal are right. The Navi's going at his point to make sure that he was not doing it l'shem Avodah Zarah. Did he build Bamot to every god that belonged to all the 700 wives? That's a lot of Bamot. And I'm sure among those 700 wives, you had a lot of Avodah Zarah, real Avodah Zarah going on. I believe that the Navi focuses on the two least forms of Avodah Zarah, I think. That's just my impression. You can go either way. Is to focus on the fact that the reason why he does it is because it's not that he would worship himself, so that everybody would have a fair shot. And that's what I believe ties back to Bat Paro. That the idea is that everybody has a fair shot. And that brings you back to tying into Mitzrayim, which was the militaristic, almost totalitarian government, which causes the split of the nation. And therefore, it's this opening up his heart to Bat Paro, not Bat Paro as a woman, but Bat Paro as a set of beliefs of ecumenicalism. I'm a Jewish guy. I'm a religious guy. But you could certainly worship a Avodah Zarah in my house. Chas v'shalom, I shouldn't tell you not to do what you want to do. That very ecumenicalism, which I think is based in Mitzrayim, was the downfall of the kingdom and of Shalom himself. Was he a Avodah Zarah? Chas v'shalom. Did he go back down to Mitzrayim when he should have? Should not have. I think he did.